Kenny Blumenfeld is with me via phone after a little bit of a jaunt into Alaska last week. And we're here to talk about, we have stuff to talk about today. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Yeah. Even though you did have all that snow in Alaska.
They have winter up there this year. You know, their winter this year is more like what we had last year. It's somewhat, not extremely, but somewhat cooler than normal in Alaska. And this is, by the way, one of the only parts of the world that has been cold.
Really?
Over this winter. Yeah, it's really mostly been warm everywhere. But in Alaska, it's been cool, and they've had a lot of snow. They get these huge sea storms. They're the same cyclones that anyone else gets, but they come off the Gulf of Alaska, which is essentially a warm water current that comes out of the Central Pacific that feeds it, which is why in Juneau and Ketchikan, they get over 100 inches of precipitation in a typical year. And they are generally pretty mild. A little farther north, inland, that's where things cool down a bit. But they've had, when those storms come in, they get snow. Like, you know, again, similar, just at Anchorage, at sort of sea level, similar to what you had in northeast Minnesota last winter. Huge snow piles. I got to shovel because it snowed about 5 inches of powder. We were staying at someone's house, so I got to shovel powder snow for the first time this winter. Mm. And then I couldn't reach the top of the snowbank to get, you know, so I was doing the thing where you kind of throw the snow and then hope that most of it stays on the pile, but a bunch of it comes back down.
Yeah.
But it was a really fun experience. And there were some towns not far from Anchorage. Whittier has close to 300 inches of snow. And up on the mountains, they're at 600-700 inches. They've just they've had a great season. Yeah, and a lot of that is just sticking around. So there were parts of the Alyeska area where the snow is, you know, 15 feet deep.
Mm. All so, right. Yeah. Meanwhile, here in the Northeast North Shore, we have had more dry and quite warm. I think it hit 70 one day in this past week. Now it seems to be shooting back down. And here we may actually have some precip coming. So tell us.
Well, so one thing is, before any real promising precipitation comes, we are battling dry weather, even with the cold front that's come through. Relative humidities are dropping again today. And our fire weather, you know, wildfires are one of these things. They're kind of part of the spring transition when it's dry. And I don't think most Minnesotans realize how many fires are ongoing at any given time in a dry spring. So we don't actually track them, but the DNR has a fire weather team with basically like fire weather forecasters. And then they kind of give people the situational awareness for, you know, fire. There's a lot of fire out in Minnesota right now. There has been the last several days.
Meaning there are a lot of fires happening. Like
They're mostly small for the most part. That's why we haven't had big smoke problems yet. But lots of reports of, you know, controlled burning getting uncontrolled, or fires starting from other sources accidentally and then taken off. They're not huge. That's my understanding. But our fire weather people have been super busy. And so the main story right now, climatologically, meteorologically, is dry weather and fire weather until we get meaningful precipitation. Now, northeast Minnesota has one shot. I think most of the precipitation is probably going to skirt off to your east over the weekend. But that was kind of one. It looks like a little snowfall event. There might be some snow even in the Two Harbors area. I guess I wouldn't hang my hat on it. But there's a little disturbance kind of diving down from Manitoba into Ontario. Mm-hmm. And it sort of signals a change. It's a really interesting change. And the flow pattern is about to we don't know if the models that we look at, how wrong they are or how right they are when you're looking at stuff a week away, but they're all kind of telling a similar story. And one of those stories is that the flow pattern is going to get really, really weird. And what I mean by the flow pattern, it's not something that you would necessarily experience on the ground, right? It's just that when we look up, you know, at how weather systems move around, most of them are actually steered by winds that are, you know, anywhere between 3 and 7 miles off the ground. That's kind of, we call those the steering winds. The jet stream winds are the most famous of those steering winds. But really, you can kind of imagine that we're sitting at the bottom of an ocean of air, and that air is in motion, and it's the motion of that air that moves weather systems around, and the majority of that motion is generated well off the ground.
Yeah.
And so there's usually kind of familiar patterns. You know, just imagine a jet stream animation that you may have seen on the news sometime, with kind of, you know, undulating kind of big U-shape and then upside down U-shape waves that just sort of, you know, kind of, they might change amplitude, meaning how high that U or how high the peak of that U or upside down U-shape wave segment is. Or they might change their wavelength, like how narrow it is. But they generally just sort of undulate across the continent. And sometimes you're north of the jet stream and sometimes you're south of it. And one of the things that these models are showing is a fascinating merging of basically what's called the polar jet, which is the thing that's been keeping cold air off to our north all winter long, and the subtropical jet. But the way that it looks like they're going to merge in multiple different places with, like, and then break off from each other and form these kind of unusual cutoff low or eddy type situations that it's okay to get. You normally get one or two in the spring, you know, as things are transitioning, but kind of a barrage of these really tightly packed, really high amplitude, and then eventually kind of cut off meandering low pressure systems that look like they're going to be showing up sometime by the end of next week. And then we just kind of get into this pattern where we're under the influence of, you know, much more jet stream energy than we have been in a while.
Okay.
And so there, some of the models have been going absolutely berserk with the precipitation output. And we have to be a little skeptical because if you don't want to just buy into what some forecast model is showing. But there have been multiple days in a row now where the majority of the models are showing the same thing. The Climate Prediction Center picked up on it. They do kind of those 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day forecasts. And as an example, one of the hazards that they have been highlighting is that between the 22nd and the 26th of March, they have a risk of heavy snow covering basically all of Minnesota. Can you imagine? We haven't had any of that this winter. That would be great.
Oh my gosh.
And it's not just Minnesota. You know, Denver just got clobbered. Especially the area west of Denver has just gotten clobbered by, you know, kind of the snowstorm of the season for them. One of the biggest in a few years. You know, the foothills getting 40 inches of snow and stuff like that. And that's kind of round one. Again, there's going to be a couple systems that come through, you know, one this weekend that's probably not going to do that much. But then by the end of next week, things could start changing. I assume we'll have a really interesting conversation next Friday.
Yeah.
Because we'll be much closer to this stuff. We'll know much more. You know, we just got an email from a National Weather Service forecaster who moved back to Minnesota after spending his time in the Southwest. And he was kind of like, I can't believe what we're seeing. This is great. It's going to be a big pattern shift. So I blame him if this doesn't happen. But it's interesting. This would be, if the models are right, and I'm not, listen to me, listeners, I'm not saying that they are.
Yep.
If the forecast models are right, though, it would indicate a significant pattern change, where we would go from, you know, not being able to buy precipitation of any consequence to, you know, having a lot of it. So interesting times ahead for
Whoa,
sure.
Yeah, so fun. I had not heard anything about this, so even just speculating on it is kind of fun, and and I just have to ask, does this mean a receding El Nino, or is it just we just got so many things going on?
Yeah, so this is the thing that really interests me, is that when El Nino is extremely complicated, right? Because it's not just warm water in the Pacific Ocean at the equator. It's also what that warm water does to the atmosphere. And one of the things it does is it makes the tropical thunderstorms that are usually off in, you know, Indonesia and in kind of the central western Pacific, it pulls them much, much farther east, right into the western coast of South America. Areas that are normally quite arid often end up with big floods from heavy thunderstorms during El Nino events. Well, what thunderstorms do is they take warm air. They're basically kind of heat machines, right? They process warm, moist air, and they convert it into upward motion. And then through that upward motion, they convert that rising air into a cooled condensed water, which eventually forms clouds and eventually forms precipitation. And this whole thing actually kind of throws a bunch of warm air into the high atmosphere, which eventually stabilizes it. When warm air gets into the high atmosphere, it starts spreading laterally and it can form what's called big ridge of high pressure. And one of the things that's showing up on the models is this huge ridge of high pressure pushing up into the southwest and central United States. And a lot of times really active weather patterns can be found right on the periphery of those types of ridges.
Okay.
And so there actually could be a connection with the death of El Nino. And this, if this weather pattern is real, and if it actually sticks around, there could be a connection between it and the fading El Nino, because there are these thunderstorms that are becoming less and less numerous, and now you have this warmer air mass aloft over the Pacific Ocean that is going to eventually spread this ridge possibly into North America. That mechanism has been identified as causing bouts of significant weather in Minnesota and the upper Midwest in other post El Nino summers. So it remains It's something to watch.
Whoa.
Yeah, so you asked a good question. I don't have a clear answer for it, but there's a potential link there.
Yeah. Cool. So bottom line is nothing much is going to happen for the next week, but a week from today, we might have a lot more to talk about.
Correct. And in the meantime, we're mostly watching for fires and fire spreading. And
right.
Hopefully those firefighters and the people doing the forecasting for it can get some relief soon.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, thanks so much, Kenny. I look forward to next week.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Katya. We'll talk to you. Have a great weekend.
Yep. Bye-bye. That was Kenny Blumenfeld, senior climatologist with the Minnesota DNR.